Welcome to our CDH Conversations podcast. In this podcast, we are going to discuss long-term leases, in particular, the long-term lease developments which are being created in order to make use of land for both residential developments and commercial endeavors, which are slightly less conventional to the ordinary manner. But the idea is catching on and becoming a popular option for developers across the country. Today's guest speaker is one of our Cliff Dekker Hofmeyr directors, John Weber. John has a few decades' experience in real estate law, and his keen mind has helped solve many a conundrum in the industry. John has kindly agreed to give our listeners a bit more information on this method of acquisition of rights to immovable property. John, welcome, and thank you for joining us today and sharing your wisdom with our listeners.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
John, always nice to have you with us and get a chance to pick the mind of somebody who's been there and seen and done so much in the industry, which is always just so nice to get a chance to talk to somebody in your position. John, can you start by giving our listeners a little rundown about what a long-term lease is?
Thanks, Kirsty. So a long lease is a lease for a period of greater than 10 years. The typical lease would impart the use and benefit of the property to the tenant for an extended period of time, usually with a lump sum rental payment made at the outset of the lease period, so that the landlord has no involvement in the property from the commencement of the lease, which is typically against the registration of the lease against the title deed of the subject property. What this all means is that the tenant is placed in the position as if he was the owner, with all the rights and obligations which would normally go with ownership, save for the right to grant servitudes, to receive expropriation consideration, and those rights would remain vested in the landowner. The contract would typically make provision for something like expropriation, how the expropriation proceeds would be divided between the landlord and the tenant, as the tenant has paid this lump sum rental in advance for the whole of the lease period.
Okay. John, you mentioned that these leases are registered. So are they registered in the deeds office? Does the holder of such a right receive a formal deed? And if so, what kind of document, what kind of deed do they get?
The lease agreement, which is between landlord and tenant, the landlord being the registered owner of the property, firstly, it's reduced to a notarial format and executed by the parties or their representatives in front of a notary public. This notarially executed document is then lodged in the deeds office for registration against the title deed of the property, which is subject to this lease.
Interesting.
After the registration, the lessee will receive the deed of lease, and that becomes the document which evidences his right to use and occupy the property for the entire lease period, and also which governs his rights in relation to the disposal of his right to be there. The landlord would receive his original title deed back from the deeds office, but endorsed now with the registered lease, so that if the landlord was to sell the property to anyone else, the third party buyer of the actual land would buy it subject to this registered lease and would be bound to that lease.
Interesting. Thank you. John, one of the reasons with us getting together today is that there is a new kind of long-term lease. So my question when not new, it's been around for ages. It's just that your brilliant mind actually came up with a great use for it in today's day and age that I think a lot of people didn't really think of back in the day. So one of my questions with these kinds of long-term leases is, are these long-term leases transferable from one holder who holds that lease, let's say, for 30 years or 99 years? Can they transfer it? Can they sell that right to somebody else?
Most definitely. The rights under the long-term lease are capable of transfer by means of the cession. The value of the right to be transferred is linked to the remaining lease period. And as a result, it's advisable to always make provision in your long-term lease that with the disposal of the lease term must first be extended back to 99 years. This is to the advantage of the landlord in that he has a certainty as to when this lease is going to run out with his new tenant following the cession of the right. But more importantly, for the purchaser of this right, that he knows that he is getting a full, let's call it, bundle of rights for the entire lease period, again, reinstated to the initial 99 years. The cumulative effect of this is that the lease will run collectively for more than 99 years, but at no point will it be for more than 99 years, because each time there's an extension, it is extended back to 99 years and never beyond 99 years.
Amazing. So essentially, this could last, theoretically, it could last forever.
In the leases that we have put forward and are often registering, those leases, while they are not perpetual, are capable of an infinite number of extensions, each time back to 99 years from the date of the registration of the deed of extension.
Amazing.
So it will certainly carry on beyond the natural life of any person. And we also provide that if you have been the tenant for a long time and you are concerned that your lease term is running out, that you can at your election also extend the lease back to the initial 99 by extending it for a period equal to the expired portion of the lease. Essentially, the lease would then just top up back to 99 years. An important feature of a lease that we propose is by this extension, the lessee, his lease term is extended back to 99 years. So the full value of the use and occupation is reinstated. But because the return to the landlord of the use and of an occupation of the property is deferred to, again, now the extended time at the end of this 99-year period, the landlord is compensated for that extended lease period by the means of payment of extension consideration. And this extension consideration we would make payable when there is a disposal of the leasehold right, as well as when there's an election to extend the lease term back to 99 years, where such election does not coincide with a disposal of the leasehold right.
It's wonderful. I mean, nowadays, a person actually needs to think beyond 100 years. I mean, people are living longer. So, you know, knowing that there is an option, should we live to 150, theoretically, that a person could extend it, that's wonderful. One of our other questions that we have when it comes to these long-term lease rights, how would it work with municipal payments, rates and taxes, services? Who makes those payments on such real rights to properties in these sorts of long-term leases?
Well, if you imagine all of the rights to the property to be 100%, then when you separate the right to use and occupy by means of the lease from the bare dominium, you would see that this 100% is divided, say, notionally 1% to 99%. And the bare dominium remains property for purposes of the Municipal Property Rates Act, whereas the 99-year lease is also regarded as immovable property in terms of, one, the Deeds Registries Act, but secondly, the Municipal Property Rates Act. So the lease itself becomes rateable. The local authorities do not necessarily have systems sophisticated enough to actually bill for the separate categories of rights. And as a result, our leases provide that to the extent that there is no separate billing, the lessee pays all of the charges which relate to the property as a whole, as if the lessee was the owner. My lessee, tenant, same thing. The idea behind this is that because the tenant is leasing the property for 99 years, he should be placed in as closely similar a position as if he was the owner. So all the obligations that go with ownership, paying rates and taxes, paying levies, maintenance, insurance, etc., are included in the lease as obligations to be met by the tenant. To the extent that the tenant picks up those obligations, the landlord is freed from it.
Good to know. So people who are interested in buying in those areas with those sorts of leases know that there will be responsibilities. So essentially, you are seen or treated almost as an owner, which is good. I think it also makes a person feel a little bit more secure with their right then in that regard. Just to put the whole concept into perspective for some of our listeners, and so that a listener can actually grasp how large some of these developments can be, could you tell us a little bit about a development in Gauteng where the use of such long-term leases has been successfully implemented already, and maybe why the developers chose to make use of such a long-term lease instead of conventional ownership?
So the best example is the Waterfall development, which is situated along the N1 between Johannesburg and Pretoria, just to the north of the Buccleuch interchange. Another important reference point is probably the Mall of Africa. All of that land is restricted in its use and the ability to sell it by virtue of the restrictions imposed by the landowner on the initial acquisition of the land, owned by a company, but the shareholders of that company, when they bought it, they said this land may never be sold. So when approached by the landowner's children, grandchildren, regarding the commercial value extraction in relation to a very large piece of land, we were faced with some questions as to how do we create a separation of ownership from use and occupation, but at the same time, making it possible to transfer the rights and to give people real rights as opposed to personal rights. And it's for that reason that we came up with the long-term lease. Other alternatives might have been the servitude of usufruct, but those are impractical as they're not transferable. The other advantage of the lease was that it allowed the landowner to remain owner while a developer took on the responsibility to develop the respective pockets as townships and the installation of services. It meant that the landowner could defer any payment that was due to him by the developer until such time as the developer had fully enhanced the land with roads, water, electricity, sewage connections, etc., and then found an end user who wanted to build a house on it or buy the lease of the sectional title unit. That allowed for an alternate funding structure to be put in place, that the landowner didn't have to be paid everything up front. They could defer when they receive their money, which has most definite advantage for the developer in that it lowers their transaction costs, lowers their funding costs throughout the development period. And the effect of that is that the units can come into the market at a lower cost.
I love this whole concept. I've driven past Mall of Africa and those developments, and they are so perfectly positioned. You work in Pretoria, Midrand, Joburg, and you live in the hub. You know, you live in the middle of everything, and yet you still have space and a tree, which is always wonderful. John, can you tell our listeners a little bit about these long-term leases and if they are actually mortgageable? If I decide to buy a property in Waterfall, for example, some of those properties are 4, 5, 6 million rand. Am I able to obtain finance?
Kirsty, you most definitely can. As I mentioned earlier, the registered long-term lease is immovable property for purposes of the Deeds Registries Act, which means it can be mortgaged. The result is you can buy your lease, you can go to the bank, get a loan. The bank can take security over the lease by means of the registration of a mortgage bond. And the format of the documentation is the same as it would be for a normal mortgage bond, with one small exception, which is maybe technical to others, in that it's not the property that is mortgaged, but the right title interest of the tenant to the lease of the property, which is mortgaged. Our leases also cater for the rights of the banks as financiers of the acquisition of the right to lease, so that if someone does not pay their loan and the bank needs to recover the debt, they can sell that lease as they would normally sell the property in a sale and execution. That also goes for the residents association. If its levies are not being paid, or the municipality, the rates and taxes are not being paid, in the case of the levies, the property association or residents association could attach and sell the lease. In the case of the rates and taxes not being paid, the landowner would pay the municipality and then issue summons against the tenant to attach and sell the lease to recover the amounts paid to the local authority. And then it's for that reason that the tenant needs to keep up all of his payments, is that as much as this is a lease, it is an asset that can be sold in execution.
Sure. Very much similar to ownership. I mean, you're acquiring something that's of great value and it needs to be taken care of.
As I mentioned earlier on, the idea is that the use and occupation of the property and the rights that flow from the lease should, as far as possible, mirror the position which an owner would find himself if he was buying the property, which was the property itself as opposed to the lease of the property. So we've tried to put in place all the necessary mechanisms to see that mirroring occur. So the transfer process is very similar to the transfer of freehold property. When you mortgage it, the process is exactly the same. If you've defaulted and someone attaches the lease and they want to sell it, it's the same court process. So that it is simple for everyone involved to administer, because it's not a different process that's being applied, it's the same process.
We've stuck to what we've learned and know what works, which is great. John, thank you so much for joining us today. I have no doubt in my mind that this podcast has been very informative to our listeners, many of whom I'm sure have driven past a development which consists of these types of long-term leases, but perhaps never knew, or if they did, perhaps didn't understand how this form of acquisition worked. Listeners, thank you for joining us. If anyone ever has further questions or is interested in developing property in this manner, 100% I can tell you that we have an amazingly learned mind here at Cliff Decker Hofmeyr. John, don't go anywhere. I think there's a lot of people who are going to be asking so many more questions and needing so much more guidance with this concept. It's wonderful. Thank you so much again for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
The views and information expressed are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily present those of the firm. All content is provided for general purposes only and does not constitute legal advice. We make no representations, warranties, or guarantees, whether expressed or implied, that the content on our podcast is accurate, complete, up-to-date, or reflects the current law. We accept no responsibility for any loss or damage, whether direct or consequential, arising from reliance on the information which is presented here.